Oh, yes. Would you believe that from 1957, it's Thad Jones on trumpet, Kenny Burrell on guitar, Paul Chambers on bass, Arthur Taylor on drums, Frank West on tenor sax and flute, and Mal Waldron on piano. That's from Thad Jones's 1957 album, After Hours. You know, the more you listen to music that we haven't listened to in a long time, the more you appreciate the absolute genius of all those musicians who, back in the day, were doing their very best and so preserved a whole art form that still too many people are not familiar with. So Thad Jones is, of course, a member of the legendary Jones family. His specialty is trumpet. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and good to be with you again. I must say that we have an announcement to make, just in case you turned on the radio this morning and you had a little difficulty. Let's get an expert explanation. As you know, I use the internet a lot. I should know a lot more about it than I do. So let me ask the engineer to give us a fast summary of what has happened if you tuned in and you didn't get PRN.FM. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. We're just doing some maintenance on PRN.FM, and if you need to listen to the show and if you can't hear the show, what you want to do is you want to go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. That is ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Spell it fully out, and it will take you right to the temporary website where you can hear all the shows live.
Great. So that relieved me of a very highly technical explanation, which I didn't trust myself to share with the audience. I might have complicated things more than necessary. Thanks a lot. Okay. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about some pretty interesting things, actually. We're in a very interesting time in this nation, and we don't quite know how it will all turn out. But I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask, and I sure wish you had an answer or answers to them, because they begin an exercise that, you know, we do regularly here, especially when I don't understand things. I like people to chime in and put in the pot what they think is happening. So here's my question. I have several, but I'll start with the first one. Based on your own observation, your direct experience, and news reports that you've seen or read or listened to, has progress been made on race in America? And if so, in what ways would you say progress has been made? Let me repeat it. Based on your own observation, direct experience, and news reports you have seen, read, or listened to, has progress been made on race in America? You no doubt might have figured out that this comes on the heels of a very explosive recent experience the nation had, and we're still trying to cope with it. But I'm not going to say what it is. You supposedly would know. Another question that you might prefer. America's gun culture, so deeply ingrained in this society and culture, that it's beyond, is it beyond change? America's gun culture is so deeply ingrained in its society, in this society. Do you believe it is, the society is beyond change as regards gun culture, or gun laws effective or not? Are we destined to live with violence? What must be done to significantly change this aspect of American life? Are we destined to live with violence? What must be done, in your view, of course, to significantly change this aspect of American life? And the fourth question, which you may choose from, where does gun violence fall on your list of America's plagues? Where does gun violence fall on your list of America's plagues? There's no right or wrong to these questions in terms of answers, but I'm interested in your perspective, and particularly interested in the context of your perspective on these questions. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's get started quickly. Let's not waste any time. You should have answers just like that. You should know that these questions are age-old questions. This entire society has been dealing with these questions, wrestling with them, not finding easy answers to them, not at all over the years that we've been asking these kinds of questions. But that doesn't mean we stop asking these questions. We are, after all, part of a society, and it's a unique society in many ways. The society has a character, a history of its own, and I doubt anybody can truly say that they're not at all affected by the American society as a whole, what it thinks, how it behaves, what it does, what its, I should say, its priorities are. So here it is. We've just come through a traumatic experience. I'm not going to say what it is because it might be part of your answer. But you don't get the sense, really, that this nation, as a nation, really pauses purposefully to examine these questions and to get at the answers, if we can, so that we know how best to improve the society. We know only from time to time some explosive violence occurs. There's no sense to them. There's no way to accept them at all. You have to just cope with them wherever you are in the United States. And you have to accept one thing. They're a part of the American culture, as are we. We are all part of the American culture, and we still cannot really fully cope with the enormity of these acts of violence when they do occur. But what causes it? And how Does the country get a handle on it? What has to be done? What are some of the ways in which we can attenuate this and reduce the clear impact it is having on American life as a whole, and not just for one day, but all through the history of the United States? We've become so used to it, we don't consider it most unusual. We don't consider it irregular. We don't consider it bizarre, even. We consider it as just yet another instance of wanton violence. We don't know how to stop it, it seems. We don't know why it has become so entrenched in our culture as a nation. It is very American. And there are people who would say it is one of the great exports of America, its violence, its violent nature. We'll start today with Tony from Orlando. You're on the air. Hello, Tony. What do you offer us as a possible explanation for all of this? Which question are you going to answer?
Okay, I'm going to try.
Hello? Tony, your call dropped off, so I didn't hear the whole question being answered. I didn't hear it. So call back if you can. 888-874-4888. We are reluctant to really address these questions. People raise it because, well, you know, it's in the news and we have to talk about it. But it is not a national focus. It's not a national occupation. It's not something that concerns us as a nation. We don't have national discussions occurring, except in the sense that, well, it's part of the news cycle. So in that sense, yes, you could expect anytime there is an explosive situation, it will account for some kind of coverage. But that does not mean we are helped into understanding what it is we are witnessing, or what is being reported, or how we as citizens are supposed, well, forget the word citizens, but how do we as people living in this country, how do we receive news like that? What do we do with that kind of information? How does it affect us in our daily lives? Perhaps you have an idea. Perhaps you have an answer. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I don't see anybody. I thought I had Tony, but Tony, you dropped off. I don't know what happened there. But let's see who else is calling and can give us an answer to any of the questions that were raised today. There are four major questions that I thought I would raise. You can pick any of them. 888-874-4888. We have no calls yet. What is going on? People are reluctant to talk about violence. And they're reluctant to talk about a very American form of violence. All over the world, this country is known as a country that specializes in a particular kind of violence. In fact, you could even say, and you won't be wrong to say it, that this form of violence has been so closely associated with the psyche of America. How come? How did that happen? How do you, as a in your daily life, how do you adjust to a society that has this as a preeminent characteristic. Tony, you're back, and we're ready to listen to you.
Yes, I got disconnected. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't know at what part I got disconnected, but what I was trying to say was that the violence that we have in this country, particularly gun violence, is a result of old slave laws that benefit some at the expense of others. And just like we had the case in Georgia, Ahmaud, when he got hunted down, basically that is the image. That is these laws that are on books that allow people to do certain things. And I mean, that case, there's a recent case in Michigan where you have a couple that purchased a firearm for a child, and when they read into the text messages, it was as if, you know, they have total power. They don't, you know, they're not beholden to any laws. They're very arrogant in that sense of they don't follow the rules. You know, the rules only apply to certain people in this country, and you know, and I get to do whatever I want to do, you know, and I got the right to bear arms. These are old slave laws that are on the books. The Second Amendment is a slave law, and that's why we have all of this violence.
Okay, so let's say I'm going along with your premise here. So what? We have to live with it forever?
I believe, I don't think we have to live with it forever. I think it has in part to do with white fear, in part, because they fear that they need to have total control. It might get to a point in the country when you have when the white race becomes a minority, and they come to a capitulation that when they're going to realize that that the world is not going to end when they become a minority, and you know, everybody's not going to come at them and wipe them out of existence when they get over the fear factor, okay. Maybe at that point, we can start relaxing some of these slave laws as far as the Second Amendment is concerned and these loose gun laws that we have in this country. But until then, we're going to have to continue dealing with this Second Amendment issue in this country. And that's basically how I see it. I see it as a... It's a fear. It's just the fear of losing power and losing control.
But aren't you oversimplifying things to say it's all about fear? Let me ask you to apply your theory to the issue that we experienced as a nation this past week.
Yeah. As far as
was that fear?
Yes, it is fear. This child, there was a child in Michigan that went and went on a shooting rampage. That child, I believe, was in fear of his, some sort of fear. Or they were living in fear. I mean, supposedly they were these Trump supporters and whatnot. And from what I see, a lot of them are very big time into this fear of having some home invasion, someone going into their home and invading them and doing some harm to their family, so they need to be armed and ready. That is the whole narrative behind this whole thing. Or they're in fear of this tyrannical government. Those are the arguments that typical pro-gun people make, is that They're going to form a well-regulated militia and fight against this tyrannical government. Last I know, the only government we have is the United States of America. And if you think you're going to go up against the United States military, good luck. So that total argument is a bunch of BS. And if you're going to live in fear of 0.0001% of an event that might never even happen to you in your life, well, keep doing living that way. But that is that's basically what it is. It's fear.
All right. Well, you got us started, and you introduced us to your idea about fear. Thanks so much for getting us started today. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
How's it going today, Chief?
How are you doing?
Pretty well, thank you. Now, this is a personal issue, or an issue that's you know, personal to me, not in the sense of, you know, I haven't lost anyone due to gun violence recently, but come to think about it, actually, my friend, when I was 15 years old, was killed by the police here uptown in Harlem. But recently, there have been shootings, there have been murders right around my block. I mean, I live on 130th Street, and there was a murder about a month ago on 131st Street, and another one shortly before that. A pregnant woman was murdered on 129th Street. One time I was going to take my son to the playground just down the block, and he wanted to ride on the trains because he's a train buff, so he's really enthusiastic about the train. So we go on different random train rides, which isn't too safe either, but we went on the trains, and it turns out the subways were safer at that moment than the playground, because when I came back, a lot of people were traumatized, as you hear the sirens in the background. People were traumatized by gunshots that were fired back and forth. There was some kind of shootout right over the playground in the afternoon. So, you know, I mean, it's beyond a quality of life question at this point. I mean, it's an utter absurdity. I mean, the amount of rent that we pay, the amount of taxes that we pay to live in these conditions, it's unimaginable. I mean, I've always, you know, been a New Yorker. I was born and raised in New York. But I think every day about where could I leave that is not this place. And it doesn't have to be the fanciest place in the world, but if there aren't people shooting at each other randomly, and there aren't people passing out on the sidewalks, and all the other crazy, just random behavior that my children unfortunately have to be subjected to, I would love to go to that place. Because, you know, as a single person, it's one thing, you can kind of take your life into your own hands, but when you're responsible for innocent children, and there's an elder in this household, it's really nerve-wracking on a daily basis. All that being said, the gun issue, in terms of the overarching question of gun rights, Second Amendment, etc., is a kind of a complicated one, I'm afraid to say, because I do believe there is truth to the fact that if the population is completely unarmed, then tyranny is a lot easier to apply. And that has to always be borne in mind by the government or the powers that be, because, I mean, look, in Austria, they just issued the first, as far as I know, total vaccine mandate, where they're saying anyone who's 12 years old has to be vaccinated. I don't know what, I guess, people who aren't vaccinated are expected to do at that point. I mean, are they supposed to repatriate? I don't know. But there's been a total national mandate, and that type of thing can't be implemented quite as easily here, because there are armed individuals, there are unruly folks, and, you know, if the government in some hypothetical situation comes to your door to either kill you or take you to a concentration camp or whatever the case may be, well, yeah, a lot of people would rather die fighting. They would rather die defending themselves. And, you know, as unlikely as that type of scenario may be, human history is pretty messy. So I find it interesting when people act as though the idea of defending your life is an abstract concept. Well, it's not an abstract concept throughout history and in many places in the world right now. So you know, I think it's a really tricky issue in a variety of ways, but there is something that we have to try to identify, and there maybe there's more than one feature or more than one aspect to it, but there is a death culture in America. Like it was pointed out in, what was it, Bowling for Columbine by Michael Moore after the Columbine school shooting. He did that great documentary, and one of the things that he pointed out, which was fascinating, is that there's an enormous amount of gun ownership in Canada, but they don't have equivalent or nearly equivalent levels of gun violence. So why is that? It's not just the availability of a gun. It's the willingness to use it. And in so many of these examples, we're seeing the willingness to use it in the most senseless of ways. And that's the underlying problem. You can make a million laws. You can, you know, try to put a million Band-Aids on a hemorrhage. But the fact is that, you know, we're teaching children just meaninglessness and nihilism. It's just we're pumping it in their heads. We have, you know, a culture that just celebrates artists who are literally just saying in their lyrics, I don't care about women. I don't care about the community. I'll kill somebody if they make me upset. I mean, it's just absurd entertainment that we call entertainment. I mean, the Grand Theft Auto, you could literally go around raping people with your character. You could go around killing people. I mean, children are playing this stuff. So, you know, I don't know what's to be done, but it's a problem of the human heart is what I'm getting at. And, you know, you can make a million laws and a million mandates, but if we don't start to somehow address what's happening around that heart area, we will never improve any of this.
Well, you don't paint a promising picture on this question. Why do you think it's so hard to come by answers? Why is it so hard to find
Because it's a psychological
solutions?
Issue and a legal issue. It's a manifold issue. There's cultural issues, psychological issues, legal issues, technical issues. Like one major technical feature of all of this is where do the guns come from? They're not manufacturing guns in the hood. You know, like I point out in regard to, not to change subjects, but all the so-called illegal aliens, I say they're not illegal aliens. They're refugees. They're fleeing war-torn conditions that have come about because U.S.-issued weapons are in their homelands and in the hands of paramilitary people, mafia type of people, creating unlivable conditions, and people flee for their lives. And you say, oh, you're an illegal alien, and punish them again. And it's the same thing in the hood. No one's manufacturing these guns in the neighborhood. You know, there's only a few entities with that kind of ability to make those kind of weapons, and all of those weapons are tagged, and we need to start making a registry of, well, where are these guns coming from, and how did they get from here to there? Because they all have identification markers, except for these new guns, which are not most of the guns being used, where they somehow, it's an anonymous gun that basically you can kill someone and they don't have the gun signature that's on almost every manufactured firearm. But where are the guns coming from? And, you know, how exactly are they arriving in the community?
Very good questions. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Latrice.
Good afternoon, Ed. What is your take on this whole thing?
Well, I'm not the gun question. I think that's been pretty much dealt with. America has a level share with guns. There's a true history, and there's a mythos surrounding firearms in America, their use, their availability, their usefulness as far as in revolt, and it's been exaggerated. And until America grows up and confronts the true history of guns and the true history of violence in this country, we're always going to be this way. There's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of politics involved, both politics, large amounts of money. The National Rifle Association, at this point, you think they'd be laughable. Well, for Wayne LaFierre and the scandals they've been through, but they still wield a large amount of power. And that's because we have money in politics and there's money behind guns. And as long as that legislative branch is nullified, we're never going to get anywhere. But I'd also like to address the question you put about race in this country and how far we've come with it. And I totally believe we haven't. We've gone backwards as far as forwards into dealing with the construct of race in this country. We still haven't really parsed out or even set out on a logical and productive conversation of reparations, which I believe is a large part of dealing with the construct of race in this country, how it should be applied and when it should be applied. We started off on a good pace, but that seems to have fallen by the wayside. We still have lines of delineation drawn in this country based on the construct of race. And America is separated. And people are talking, but no one's really listening. And that's where the crux of the matter, I believe, is. You can't have a logical or ethical or even moral debate on topics like race and guns in a country where people are so myopic and one-sided to where they turn into an emotional reaction when it should be a logical political reaction. And that's where I see it.
What, in your view, then, is a logical reaction? A logical political reaction.
Pertaining to race?
Pertaining to the problem as you defined it or began to define it.
First, America must really accept the fact how much slavery, how much racism, and how much the brutality of slavery went to go build this country. And that a debt is owed to the people of this country. And then let's really sit down. Let's really come to terms with the American experience and let's try to rise above it. And let's work towards a more equal society, not just paying lip service, but let's provide some services. Let's provide some, let's break up the military budget. This country has over 350 military bases around the world, and there's really no viable enemy to fight. China's not interested in going to war. China's interested in making money. And Russia is an afterthought. So instead of all these billions and billions of dollars we spend on defense and war, we need to reincorporate it back in the community. We need another great society again. We need to push social work. We need to rework the infrastructure. We need to revitalize the social aspect of our country and promote community. That's a logical.
But what you're outlining is not on anybody's roadmap right now because they see it as way too long term. What is there in your mind as a more short term, a shorter term response to an evident problem? Such an approach be?
Well, that's the problem. You can't. Some things, there's no easy way to make a cake. You know what I mean? There's no easy way to build a car. You start with the basics and you build from there. You have to have an intention to change, and there sometimes there are quick fixes. So it took time to get this way, and it's going to take time to change. But it's got to be a consistent effort. We need sincere politicians. We need a sincere base of people that are willing to go through the uncomfortability of the change to make the change. Sometimes there's no free lunch. There's no cheap grace.
So, if I hear you right, we shouldn't expect radical and dramatic change anytime soon on this question of guns and racism.
On the question of guns, I mean, that's from a legislative aspect. Well, America's got to get out of the mythos of guns. I mean, even in colonial times, when you talk about the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, every colony, when there weren't attacked by Indians or in the in the active of Revolutionary War Minutemen, they had community armories, and the guns were held there. And when there was a call to arms, the men reported to the armory and pulled their guns out. Very few men had guns. Guns were expensive. A flint musket, a Remington repeating rifle, they weren't the common man's tool. The common, even in the Wild West, the weapon of choice was the Bowie knife, because you could stab someone and pull it out without getting hung up on their guts. And more people died from knife than gun in the West anyway. And as a question of race, that's an age-old problem that has been in this country. The social construct of race went to the wealth building of this country. It allowed a certain part of this country to dehumanize another part of this country and make wealth off of their backs. And until that is understood and accepted and all the excuses are blotted out, then we can move forward. Then we can sit down and realistically and rationally discuss reparations and how to rebuild a society and how to repair reparative justice and reparative damages that need to be addressed. But these are grown up things. These ain't for children. These are grown up concepts, and America's got to grow up.
Okay, thank you so much, Ed, for your analysis today. Thank you. Brother David from Brooklyn, how you doing?
Good afternoon. I've been thinking about your questions, and what comes to mind for me is the only way that we're going to get any improvement is when people come to the realization that this nation was never established for the benefit of the masses of people here. I mean, we came from a nation that was under a monarchy into a slave state or country, a slave nation. And we have to understand that those people, the ruling people that established this place, the people who wrote the Constitution, people that met in Philadelphia, never had it as their intention in writing this Constitution to be for the benefit of the masses of people. So we have that today, and those same people or their heirs are running all divisions of the government. So as long as people don't understand the reason for having the setup that we have in the Congress with a Senate that can represent a couple hundred thousand or more people in one state and 30 million people in another state like California or Texas, and understand the fact that they are not the interests of those who rule. And we do have a ruling class, and people are forced into the illusion of thinking you have a democracy, and this country was never set up to be a democracy. So most people don't know that. And all the things that are going on get the attention away from people. What the real problem is that we are a state, a republic that's involved in all over the world, and this republic gets people confused and gets plenty of scapegoats and all kinds of things to get attention away from what the real goal is, to enrich the few or in that 1%. And most people don't understand that. Their attention is on all the scapegoats and other things. In the schools, our schools are set up to train people, not to educate them. A health service that we call health is set up to enrich a certain industry, and it's a sick care industry. So the point is, the thing is not set up to benefit the people, and the people don't understand it. They don't understand this thing they call race. They don't understand about phenotypes, and we're the same species. And those who rule play upon that to manipulate the people for their own benefit. So that is why 1% of the people control the 90% of the people that live here. And that means those people who are sitting in the Congress, those slugs who work for that 1%, and all levels, judiciary, legislative, and executive. So whoever's president, that's a sort of a figurehead position, but the point is they are working for the same people, and the population doesn't understand what's going on. So that's why you have all those things like the violence, the gun violence is going on, and having people fighting against each other.
Okay. So the way you see it, then, there is no quick or reasonably quick answer to the overarching question of when and how will this end?
No, there's no quick answer to this. This is a very difficult thing, especially being that 1% that rules the country, and people don't understand that. They think they're in the democracy, and they don't know that never was intended to be a democracy. It's a plutocracy, and masquerading as a democracy, and people don't get it. So, you know, there's no quick answer to this. People don't understand anything about anthropology, so they get into this nonsense about different races when we're all the same species, and they don't understand plutocracy. People don't know anything about that. And we are in a terrible thing because the ruling 1% controls practically all the information, the schools where they teach, ignorance to a large extent, where the press, they control that. They control the electronic press, the radio, television, just about everything. So the people are at a big disadvantage. So they wind up shooting each other and doing all these things while the ruling class laughs. And, you know, and it trots out scapegoats and all kinds of diversionary tactics rather than dealing with the problem, which is them, those who rule. And we don't get it. We never talk about the real enemy. We talk about, you know, those Mexicans or the black people or whatnot. And you can control people when you divert the attention away from what the real issue is. And the real issue here is capitalism, imperialism, and a war economy that enriches a few at the expense of the many. It even has the masses of people, the not ruling class people, give up their children in senseless wars and going to Vietnam and thousands of them being killed and going to Iraq or Afghanistan, and all of this that is in the favor of the ruling class and not in the interest of the masses of people. And people just don't get it. And a ruling class is very effective in getting the people into a state of ignorance in many areas. So that's the problem we have. And I know I deal with that. And even some so-called educated people have not got a clue of what's going on. And that's the state that we're in.
Thank you very much, Brother David, for your commentary today. Thank you. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you, Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is well.
Good afternoon. You know, the more I hear it, the more I like it, the phrase that we greet each other with all the time, good afternoon. It's kind of quaint, and I like it.
Well, I think that goes to our home training. The generation who calls in for this program, I think that generation has some good old home training.
I think so, too.
So anyway, so I'm going to disagree with both Brother David and Brother Ed, who I usually agree with. There is no answer to gun violence, and I'll tell you why. The gun is a symbol of repression. It is an instrument of repression. It always has been, and it always will be. And right now, the symbol of the gun is to wage white minority rule. So when you look at the shooting in the school last week, the fact that the parents of that youngster were charged, that's collateral damage, because the mother of Kyle Rittenhouse, who provided him with the gun and transported him out of his jurisdiction to another jurisdiction, she was never held accountable. So you now have parents who say, she got away with it. I can get away with it too. If in fact that is my ethos. That is the principles and philosophy that I hold dear. The analogy that I make to a gun is the analogy that I make to a car. So many people are killed by drunk drivers who get behind the wheel of a car intoxicated. Are you going to outlaw the car, or is it the fact that the person got behind the wheel of the car intoxicated? So I maintain that the gun is not the issue. The gun doesn't fire itself. Kwame Ture says you cannot discuss violence with your oppressor unless your oppressor has a conscience. And unfortunately, history has shown us that the oppressor doesn't have a conscience. So the issue is not the gun. The issue is the fact that the gun is the symbol for them of repression, and they intend to use it until they achieve their objective, which is white minority rule.
In your estimation, how long do we expect to wait in order to see whether that, in fact, is the direction it's going?
Oh, it's coming real soon. Come next year, in November 2022, when we have the midterm elections, no matter who wins, there's going to be problems. And unfortunately, the Democrats don't know how to handle that. So, you know, they're engaging in intellectual discourse when, in fact, they should be preparing for when they lose and they don't trust the results of the results of the election come November 22. Those midterm elections, I don't even, you know, last year, you know, in November of 2020, I actually went to Puerto Rico because I didn't want to be here for the results of the election. I don't know where I can go in November of 2022.
You have to call Jeff Bezos and ask whether he can take you to the limits of outer space.
But I am serious. The midterm elections next year is going to be awful. Because, you know, this is a war that is being waged. And this is my mantra from now until the end of time. This is a war that's being waged for white minority rule. And the instruments that are being used are at the ballot box. So nobody will ever be able to trust the results of an election ever again in this country.
What about day-to-day living, day-to-day life? How do we restructure, or is it possible even to think that society can be restructured in such a way that people are operating with a different consciousness? What it means to be a member of a society, what your responsibilities are, how you're supposed to behave, what you're supposed to do as a productive member of that society.
You, Therese, unfortunately, folks are in the dark. They're just trying to get from one day to the next.
Well, thank you, Patricia. Thanks so much for reminding us about the steep hill ahead. Thank you. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Therese.
How you doing?
Oh,
what are your thoughts on this whole question? What is the question you want to answer anyway? Let me ask you.
The one with about gun violence? Is that one of the questions on the table?
Okay. Yes, that's on the table.
You had a star-studded A-list of callers today, even though Patricia disagreed, but she brought good points on. And it's interesting because, you know, me being and living in Chicago, I have a different perspective on gun violence because obviously when people talk about gun violence and especially gun violence within the black community, Chicago seems to be like, you know, the center or the capital of this, even though it's a city that doesn't have the most black people in it. And statistically, we don't even, you know, we don't even rank in the top five, much less the top 10 in, you know, homicides when you're talking about per capita and per citizen. But for some reason, Chicago becomes the epicenter of what they call black on black violence. But also, too, the gun issue gets woven into that because of the fact that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, most of the homicides that happen here in Chicago, it's, you know, via, you know, violence, you know, it's via the gun. But, you know, and I think you touched on this and some of your other callers touched on this, you know, violence in this country is, it's like, it's normal. It's normalized. It's normalized, you know. Many people here, when they talk about, you know, when another, you know, when a person gets shot in our community, we don't respond to it like, you know, like a white cop shooting an unarmed black person, because obviously it has, you know, it's we've all been numb to it. And this is not just black people. This is like everybody, you know, but we only react to it in a situation where, you know, you had in Michigan where several people got gunned down in a school shooting. But you also have to take a look at who the victims are as well. When it's us, when referring to black people, it's not much of an issue when it comes to, well, you know, they're morally corrupt. They don't know how to live with each other. But then when it happens with, you know, school shootings like in Columbine and what happened this weekend in Michigan, and the victims are white, then all of a sudden it's a legal problem. But this ties back to, you know, what I think Ed was talking about, the racial aspect of it, because of the fact that, you know, black people are not supposed to have guns. And just like what Patricia was saying, the guns are only supposed to be owned by white people because of white, you know, because the up and coming white minority rule will be implemented. White people, you know, obviously with the browning of America and the blackening of America, you know, white people are going to be a numerical minority. So they're going to have some sort of instrument to protect themselves, you know, to be the numerical minority. And so with this issue of race, and talking about, you know, how, you know, black on black violence, you know, is permeating in our communities, you know, quote unquote, guns need to be taken away from black people. But, you know, obviously in Chicago, it's actually, you know, if you want to get a gun on the streets, it's actually easier to get a gun on the streets than to, you know, get a, you know, to get anything that, you know, might be easier to get, you know, like a book or something. You know, I could go there's a couple of streets I could go down and buy a gun for $20 if I wanted to. But, you know, that's how it is. The accessibility of guns is just, you know, crazy. But then at the same time, you know, they want to talk about how, you know, we mishandle guns and we need, you know, we don't need to have guns in our communities. Well, I don't think the guns are the problem.
What's the problem?
Well, I mean, you know, we live in a culture of violence, which tends to stray us away from valuing life. And like I said, this is not just a black problem. This is everybody's problem within this country, because this country, and it's been said before, it's a culture of death when you're talking about living in this country. Because obviously, we don't value life within our country. We don't value life with other people in other countries. You know, all we value is materialistic, monetary, economic gain at all costs, even if it means destroying the environment, destroying lives, destroying everything.
Well, we have to leave it there. Some good thoughts today. Some penetrating ideas, and we will continue this discussion because it has to be had. Thank you all for contributing so meaningfully today, as you usually do, and let's meet up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.